welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome ass.
Yo, yo,
ah, now, fucker.
Tune in to Al Joe, the funk master. Watch your grill, yoga, knock that cold faster. Talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet, fuck a name and the fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the weekly scraps. This is a pretty fast turnaround. We got fights tomorrow, which is Wednesday, July 15th. We got the title. We have the headliner, Dan Ige, taking on Calvin Kattar. Quick turnaround for Ige. This is actually a pretty big fight for the featherweight division. I'm super excited about this card, not for a couple of reasons. Obviously, where the UFC is pumping out a ton of content right now, getting guys fights, guys and girls fights, making sure people are staying busy, getting paid. If you want to fight, just put your name in the cat in the magic hat, and good things will happen for you. We're in weird, unprecedented times with the whole COVID-19. Everything's shut down still for the most part. People are still starting to open up in phases, so things are starting to slowly get back to normal. Over here in New York, we're still at a point where we don't know when gyms are going to actually be able to become reopened. And I think there's like a class action lawsuit coming against New York State for not allowing gyms to reopen in any of these phases. And phase four is supposed to be the last phase, which definitely sucks. So unfortunately, this is the times that we are living in. But real quick, I want to give a shout out to this week's sponsor host, which is DraftKings. If you are unfamiliar with DraftKings, DraftKings is the leader in one-day fantasy sports. Puts you in the center of Fight Island action with new contests every week. Feel the sweat like never before and compete to win huge cash prizes. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. I'm actually pretty new to DraftKings myself, and I'm going to jump in the mix and get in the game, as they say. It's pretty much just like a one-day fantasy. So you go out there, you make your lineup, and you got a salary cap. You hit that salary cap, and you must pick six fighters for that salary cap, and you have to stay under that budget. And from there, you score points based on significant strikes, takedowns, all that in the third. And of course, you want to make sure you're picking big finishers and people that finish early, because the earlier they finish, the guys that finish the fights, you're going to get more points for those fighters. So make sure you choose very, very wisely. Real quick. So let's get into our weekly breakdown. Well, midweekly. We have Calvin Kattar taking on Dan Ige. Big fight for the featherweight division. Calvin Kattar, super tough dude, coming off a very nice, impressive win over the always tough Jeremy the Heathen Stevens. Big fight for him. Big win in his cap to go out there and finish the fight with a stepping elbow. I mean, he didn't finish it with the elbow, but the elbow was what caused pretty much the beginning of the end. And that was a fun fight. And I wasn't sure which way that was going to go, because I knew the boxing of Kattar was a lot cleaner than Stevens. But we know Stevens has the power and the durability, and he always manages to come back from the depths of pain and unleash pain on his opponents time and time again. We've seen multiple finishes from Jeremy Stevens. So the way Calvin went out there and took on that fight and approached it and got him out of there was super impressive, and I think puts him right back into that title contention picture after that loss to Zabit Magomedsharipov. And that was a very close fight, and it should have been a five-rounder, but they made it a three, and that was over in Russia, and it was the main event. So strange things happened, and it looked like Kattar was starting to come back at the end of that fight, and I would have liked to have seen two more rounds to see which way it would have gone. Maybe Zabit would have had to do a little bit, a different kind of management with his strength and his energy meter to make sure that fight was a little bit more, I guess, managed a little bit better in terms of his energy meter. Yeah, pretty much that. Dan Ige coming off a split decision win over Edson Barboza. Wow. Now, here's my thing. I like Ige. He's a cool dude. He changed his name to 50K Ige, which is pretty funny. The only thing that I will say is I didn't think he won that fight against Edson Barboza. Very, very close. I think him being dropped and then him pulling guard with Barbosa ending on top, I thought that was enough for Barbosa to get the win. Barbosa's debut at 145, so I can only imagine what Barbosa's feeling. But that was neither here or there. Danny got the win, and I think he got away with one. And for him to take it on a tough dude like Calvin Kattar, I think makes things very interesting. Because we know Ige is he's a very high-level grappler. Did a lot of training with Khabib and stuff like that. He's got a great training camp down there in Vegas. But what I'm worried about is the striking ability of Kattar. Can Ige get inside and close the distance and get the fight to the ground without enduring too much punishment? We saw him chasing around Edson Barbosa, and for the most part, he was eating a lot of strikes on his attempts to get inside. I mean, he made it a gritty fight back and forth, but for the most part, I thought Barbosa was coming out on the right side of those exchanges. So with that being said, it's a difficult one to see Dan Ige getting inside and being able to get the fight to the ground. But then again, Kattar, I don't know how great his takedown defense is. He doesn't use a ton of footwork, but he just, to me, relies on that clean boxing-esque striking ability. He doesn't kick too much. Maybe Ige can find some success with that, going to the calf kicks that a lot of people are starting to utilize a lot more in MMA, and maybe that can slow down the fight over the stretch of five rounds and help Ige get the fight to the ground eventually. So that's a fun one. If I had to pick on that one, I'm leaning towards Calvin Kattar just based on the body of work that he's done so far. And he had a good fight with Zabit, and he's a very good grappler. And he didn't seem overly phased, so it's hard for me to say that he's going to be in any much of a different situation. I think he's got the experience to take on a tough dude like Dan Ige. The next one, Tim Elliott versus Ryan Benoit. This is a good fight. Tim Elliott coming off of a loss to Brandon Royval, his debut at the Apex last month. And now Tim Elliott is coming back, and he's trying to get on the right side of things and taking on a very tough Ryan Benoit. For some reason, Vegas wouldn't let Benoit fight. Whatever, that's neither here or there. Some type of issue happened with some substance with like the Pico. I don't know. I don't know the whole backstory, but something happened that kept him off that card, which I was very, very much looking forward to seeing him get back in there. He's a heavy hitter for 125, and he brings it. He slangs them things, man. He slangs them things. But that would have been a good fight to watch. But this one, Tim Elliott, the herky-jerky, awkward-style MMA, going to be attacking from all angles and looking for continuous takedowns. I will say Tim Elliott's demise was going for all these takedowns and not really utilizing control at any point where he could have solidified the positioning and caught his breath a little bit instead of overly working himself. And I think that ended up backfiring on him a lot of bit actually, and ended up putting him in a submission that saw him ultimately tap out. Ryan Benoit, like I said, heavy hitter. This is a good one. And I do believe Benoit is actually pretty cheap on the side of the DraftKings, the numbers. I think Ryan Benoit, yeah, his 7,700. So with those odds, I like that because, like I said, I think, like I said, you get more money, you get more points for early finishers. And I do think the power of Benoit, I don't think he's a great grappler, but I think the power of him that he possesses at that division 125, I think he could land something on Tim Elliott and get him out of there. So I would actually go with that bet. So I'm going to be throwing him on my lineup. The next one we got, Jimmy Rivera versus Cody Stamann. Now, this is my fight. This is my main event. Yeah, we got the main event, but Rivera versus Cody Stamann. Stamann on the hot side of things right now. Jimmy Rivera a little bit on the downside of things. Now, a couple questions. Does Jimmy Rivera still have his heart still in the sport? I don't know how long he's been a pro fighter for. I don't know how long he's been training mixed martial arts. I know he's been the Tiger Showman's for years, probably at least a decade at this point. So has he been doing this for too long where he might be feeling a little bit burnt out? But then you got Cody Stamann, who's been wrestling for pretty much his entire lifetime. And I don't think he's burnt out just based on the momentum of things. I think he's burnt out from cutting weight. Jimmy Rivera might be burnt out from cutting weight. This fight is at 145, but they're both two high-level bantamweights. Now, That being said, I'm interested in seeing the psyche of both guys. I already know Cody Stamen's on a high right now. Obviously, the whole thing that happened with his brother, super unfortunate, untimely death for his younger brother, and had a still a standout performance against an always tough Brian Kelleher, an always game, and pretty much as one-sided as it can get. Kelleher did have his moments, but for the most part, it was pretty much Cody Stamen that entire fight, and Brian Kelleher started to come on late in that third round. I do believe Stamen tends to gas halfway through that second round, and I think if Rivera can keep the pressure on him, he can exploit that, especially them both being at 145. Stamen still had that same problem taking on Kelleher, but Kelleher is always in your face, so I think that could probably be one of the things that push that cardio to that point. So for Rivera, I do think he has to push the pace a little bit. We've seen him from time and time again, he likes to sit back and look for the counter striking way too much. I think that sometimes that could play to his downfall. He was winning the striking exchanges with Petr Yan up until he wasn't in the first round and second round when he got caught against the cage. And I think if Stamen is smart, he's going to have to push him against the cage because that's where he tends to get caught. The same thing with me when he spit his mouthpiece out when I fought Jimmy Rivera. These are two guys that I fought. And I tend to feel whenever I got Rivera against the cage or near the cage, I've seemed to have the most success with my striking and making him most uncomfortable, waiting for him to just try to explode out of there with some striking, almost like a Tyron Woodley-esque, where Tyron Woodley would back up, and then throw that big-ass overhand right and then charge at you. Similar to like Jimmy Rivera, but he slips and rips, and he'll push forward. So I think Rivera's got the boxing ability, and he's the cleanest striker there. Both about the same height, 5'6", maybe 5'5", for Rivera. And Stamen's definitely like 5'6", maybe 5'5", as well. But pretty much the same height. Both built like fire hydrants, tree trunk legs. And I think Stamen's got a little bit more variety of strikes. He utilizes the head kicks. He has weird, I don't want to say weird, but good dexterity in his knees where he can flick those head kicks up out of nowhere when he's going out of those punching combinations. And he likes to switch back and forth between southpaw and orthodox, which I think makes another puzzle for Rivera. The same thing I felt when I was switching stances on him. He had difficulty trying to adjust his striking game to a switch stance fighter. So my intuition is telling me Cody Stamen's stock is high right now, and he's riding that wave of momentum, and he should be able to get the nod. But I do think Rivera has fought stiffer competition in terms of fighting myself, Petr Yan, Pedro Munhoz, Thomas Almeida. He's fought a lot of good guys, and I do think he can get back in the win column in a big way. Can he turn back Cody Stamen? So this is a very, very important fight for the bantamweight division and probably even the featherweight division if these guys do decide to stay up there. The next fight, Molly McCann. Oh, I didn't even say my pick. If I'm picking that one, my intuition is telling me to lean towards Cody. And I do think Cody gasses, and I do think Rivera tends to have the better gas tank in those later rounds. But Cody knows how to win, man. He just knows how to win. He knows how to stay away. So I'm going to go with Stamen. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rivera got the nod. I would not at all. I don't know if anyone's getting finished in that fight. Yeah, I don't know if anyone's really getting finished in that fight. The next one, Molly McCann versus Talia Santos. That should be a good fight. I like Molly McCann. She's kind of got like, she's like the female Conor McGregor of Ireland. Probably not as witty and all that, but she's like, in terms of the support she gets, she's like the next Irish fighter coming out of there in the UFC that's still active and is doing okay. Not Conor McGregor-esque in terms of how popular and how well he fought early on in his UFC career and blowing up. But I will say, in terms of her popularity, because of that Conor-esque, what would you even call that? Aura kind of trickling down, I guess, for lack of better words. I think she's kind of in that spotlight where if she does well in this one, she can really blow up. She can really, really blow up. Heavy hitters, Razak Al-Hassan, very, very heavy hitter at 170-pound division. That should be a good one. And Ricardo Lamas taking on Lerone Murphy. Oh, Lerone Murphy fought. He fought that guy, Tugahov. And that was a close fight. I think he fought him to a decision draw. But I was actually very, very impressed with him in his UFC debut and taking on Ricardo Ramos, who's coming up from the bantamweight division as well, fighting at featherweight. This should be an interesting fight. Ramos, if you guys don't remember, he fought Firas Zahabi's brother, Eamon, and did the two spinning elbows in a row. The second one connected and put him out. The first one connected, like, grazed him, and then he threw it again in the same exact position within, like, 5-6 seconds of each other, and the second one caught him clean and put Firas, put Eamon Zahabi's brother, well, Eamon Zahabi down, and spectacular fight. That was a devastating knockout, man. That was, ooh. I'm like, just feel your elbow and just imagine someone spinning and just cold clocking you in it, right on the jaw, right in the temple, right in the nose. When you think about it like that, it just makes your skin go like, ooh, like, yo, that hurts. It does not feel good. And it's a fight game, man. It's a freaking fight game. Other than that, we have Jared Gordon taking on Chris Fishgold, 145-pound division. This should be a fun fight. Fishgold's, I think, primarily a grappler. I remember him fighting someone where he came out guns blazing. Luque. I think it was Luque. No, that's 145. I don't know who it was. He fought someone. I think he's a pretty good grappler, if I remember correctly. Jared Gordon back at 145. He had a false positive corona test. I'm glad he came back with two false positives and two negatives showing that the first one was a false positive when he got to Abu Dhabi. So I'm looking forward to Jared. He's a fellow Long Islander now training at Duke Rufus's, but I do believe I heard that he was training down in Florida with Henry Hoof. I'm not 100% sure. I would have to go stalk his IG page to get the goods and the info on that. But I'm looking forward to him, and I do believe he's coming off of a loss, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the time to go look right now. I don't have my Jamie here yet, but I'm going to say he gets it done in this one. I think when he fights guys more of his stature, 155, I think those guys are a little bit too big for him. And he's got a gas tank like no other. Like no other. So if he goes out there and puts on the pressure, he's a pressure fighter, he's going to probably more than likely break this guy. Kind of reminds me of his fight that he did lose, where he was slowly breaking the guy down and ended up getting caught in the third round against the cage. And it was a nasty knockout, but I thought he was doing pretty well before that. And the guy was kind of built like a human specimen. And Jared just stays in there, tries to weather the storm. And normally he gets guys out of there, man. He does a pretty, pretty good job of keeping that happy medium of that pressure when he's stalking guys and not leaving too many openings to get caught. And sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't. The other one I'm looking forward to, Liana Jujua. Liana. I do believe she's a fellow Georgian fighter, and I think Marab was excited to get on the card and fight with her when they offered him Cody Stamann on short notice at 145. The fight obviously didn't happen, which is why we're still in Long Island. And I do believe she is the fellow Georgian on the card. So good luck to her. And that should be an entertaining fight. I don't think her UFC debut went well. So for her to get in the win column, I think it's going to be good for her and obviously the country of Georgia. And of course, Murad would be extremely happy to see one of his fellow countrymen doing well in the UFC as well. This other one, Jack Shore, 135, taking on Aaron Phillips. I don't really remember much about Aaron Phillips, but Jack Shore is a pretty good grappler. I want to say he's tall, too, for the weight class, probably about 5'8", 5'9", if I remember correctly. And that says something. Jack is a pretty tough dude. I got my eye on a guy like that. I think if you have really, really good grappling, you can get on the back control and really slow guys down. I think it causes a lot of problems for people. And they have to put a lot of respect on that because it shuts down the striking. And for me, fighting another high-level grappler is always interesting because it's a battle of wills and who's going to give up the positioning with each other. And I'm interested to see how he does. I think this is going to be his second UFC fight. And I know Brett Johns, another fellow Welsman, is going to be fighting, I think, Saturday as well. So we got Jack Shore this weekend, Brett Johns, we got Jack Shore this Wednesday, tomorrow, and we have Brett Johns on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to both these guys going out there and mixing up. Because I like grapplers, man. Grapplers that can go out there and mix it up on the feet as well. But ultimately, look for a finish on the ground. Not just taking you down, holding you. Actively looking to finish the fight. So real quick, let me just give you guys my lineup that I'm going with. I just was playing around with this today. Again, I'm using DraftKings. I'm going to take Ryan Benoit at $7,700. I'm going to take, I don't know if I'm taking Chris Fishgold. He's $7,900. I don't know about that. I'm going to take Jay Phillips, $7,300. I'm going to take Razak Al-Hassan, $9,200. The guy's a finisher. I do believe he fought the guy from... I forgot the guy he fought, but it was a rematch, and then he was doing the whole thing from, like, the flossing thing, and then ended up getting knocked out, like, right after that. I'm going to take Jimmy Rivera, even though I do think Stamen is going to win. I'm going to take Jimmy Rivera at $8,400. I'm going to take Jack Shore, who comes in at the most expensive on this cap, at $9,400. And the other person I am going to take, because you have to take six, is going to be... Maybe I go with Liana Jojoa. I'll go with her. Or maybe I should go with Lerone Murphy. Yeah, let's go with Lerone Murphy, $7,400. I'll go with Lerone Murphy at $7,400, and then hopefully that does me some good. Now, remember, use my promo code Funkmaster to give yourself one free ticket, which is just pretty much one free entry when you make a deposit of $5 into your DraftKings.com account. So go check those bad boys out. And outside of that, I'm gonna go get ready to get some training in. Thank you guys for always tuning in. Remember, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. I know you want to. Thank you guys for always tuning in and like my shit, subscribe to my shit, or spin it.
And remember,
this baby,
we bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.